हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
My dear Pardikit, Bhima laughed to see... Okay, Duryodhan mistook the solid floor for water and lifted the end of his garment. And elsewhere he fell into the water, mistaking it for the solid floor. Okay. My dear Pardikit, Bhima laughed to see this, and so did the women, kings, and others. Yudhishthira was always looking at Krishna, not fully satisfied. Thus, being absorbed in Krishna, he did not see Duryodhana fall in the water. If he had seen him, he would have sent his brother to bring him. Srila Sanatana Goswami. My dear Pariket, Bhima laughed to see this, and so did the women, kings, and others. King Yudhishthira tried to stop them, but Lord Krishna showed his approval. Footnote 14. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti mentions that King Yudhishthira tried to check the laughter by glancing at the women and Bhima. Lord Krishna, however, gave approval with such a gesture of his eyebrows. The Lord had come to the earth to remove the burden of wicked kings, and this incident was not unrelated to the Lord's purpose. Right, because it'll start the whole chain of reaction, it'll cause the war. Like that. Humiliated and burning with anger, Duryodhana turned his face down, left without uttering a word, and went back to Hastinapur. The saintly persons present loudly cried out, "Alas, alas," and King Yudhishthira was somewhat saddened. But the Supreme Lord, whose mere glance was bewildered Duryodhana, remained silent. For his intention was to remove the burden of the earth, right? So the sages, they can see what's going to happen. So they're going, oh, this is alas, alas, because now there's great war, so many will die, this whole thing like that. But because you're trying to remove the earth of the burden of all these demoniac kings and all that, therefore then it's an approved, it's okay. Right? That's why Krishna is in a neutral position, because it's good for the situation. But the... I have now replied to your question, O King, concerning why Duryodhana was dissatisfied on the occasion of the great Rajasuya sacrifice. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, King Yudhishthira could understand the feelings of Duryodhana, and he tried to restrain the queens. But Lord Krishna indicated that King Yudhishthira should not restrain them from enjoying the incident. Krishna desired that Duryodhana be fooled in a way that all of them enjoy his foolish behavior. When everyone laughed, Duryodhana felt insulted, and his bodily hairs stood up in anger. Being thus insulted, he immediately left the palace. Bowing his head, he was silent and did not protest. When Duryodhana left in such an angry mood, everyone regretted the incident, and King Yudhishthira was also very sorry. But despite all these occurrences, Krishna was silent. Yes.
Why? So it seems that at this particular moment, Krishna is really neutral. But before, he was a bit partial.
No, because the thing is this. You have to have a method to... Means these demoniac kings are inimical to the Lord and the devotees. So therefore, something has to be done. That's the thing in the Vedic. Both of these things are happening at once. We're used to it has to be one or the other. but they can both happen at once. So, therefore, he's acting in such a way that then it will. This is his reciprocation, because they're inimical towards the Pandavas and everything. This is his reciprocation. But it just means culturally, in this case, he's taking the neutral stand. He's not saying, he's bringing out the aspect that it's all right to laugh, but at the same time, when everyone feels bad, he's taking, you know, that neutral position. Because it's favorable towards accomplishing the Lord's mission. Like that. And then all these persons will take part. You know, and they'll all be happy. Right? Yeah, Bhima's going to be very happy, right? You know, so he laughed and he gets to take part in the, you know, yeah, so it works out.
I was also thinking that all the Brahmanas was there who had just cried out.
Yes, because they just see that then this is going to create a calamity. But at the same time, it's because Krishna's neutral, then you can see that there's some greater purpose. Now, if Krishna says, yes, yes, bring him, go find him, because they could have gone to find him. But they didn't. Right? Because of this neutral position. So it's just, you know, it's unfolding how it should. Because you have the cultural aspects, but then you have to see what's the plan, how those cultural aspects will unfold. So there's so many things here. Basically, the underlying aspect that we have to accept is we're not actually the controller here. You know, we want to be. We want to know everything so that we have more of a position to control. Because you think, if I have knowledge, then I can control. So even we want to know about everything that we have no control over. We still want to know. It's called gossiping. Like that. It means gossiping does no benefit for anybody. You know, other than, you know, how you say, if it's a cold day and you're warming up the air or something. But it doesn't do any benefit. But, you know, it's something that's... How do we get into gossip? There's a point. Yeah, so we'll leave that one.
Duryodhan, the Brahmanas crying out, Duryodhan falling. Gossip.
They could have gone and bred him, but they didn't.
Yeah.
Cultural aspect.
So it means in the culture you have the things that you have to follow the culture. But the point is you follow the culture and the situation as it works. And so in this case, he went back to the room. So then naturally you'll think, okay, he's upset and that, so we'll go and see him and this and that. But you're also there with everybody. It's not like it's that great of a thing. It wasn't that, you know, if Vishishta became insulted or Nard Muni, then everybody gets up and goes. But it was Duryodhana. He's the cousin brother. So when you're dealing with brothers, then, you know, okay, they get upset, they walk out, they go out, walk around a while, then they're back. You know, you're going to see him at dinner, right? You know, it's like, it doesn't matter what happens, they're going to eat. But he left and then just completely went. Right? He could have just gone back to his place and then they would have gone to him and then tried to work it out, but Krishna didn't want that. Because if you work it out, then how's the war going to happen? So therefore, then he went back and just packed up and left at the time. And because of Krishna's neutral position, then, okay, then you let it run. Just like when Balaram, then he's jumping up and down that Arjuna had stolen Subhadra. And that, and all the kings are, you know, everybody's, you know, very enthusiastic here. And then in that, he turns to Krishna. Because, you know, you say something, all the kings are saying something, then you turn to Krishna, and he's just there kind of pleasantly neutral. So then he goes, okay, what's going on? You know, so then he just stops, you know. And Krishna makes his point, no, but, you know, like this, and then he makes more points, and then, oh, okay.
Then he becomes neutral?
Well, no, it's just then they follow that unfolding the plan of Krishna. So it's just that combination between the philosophy and the application and culture. Then there has to be the proper balance, like that. Because otherwise, if you have culture without philosophy, it's sentiment. If you have philosophy without culture, it's speculation. You know, should we do this? Should we not do this? This, that, or, you know, we don't need to do that. We just, you know, whatever we feel like. You get these problems.
Maharaj, when we try to become neutral, we also tend to become impersonal. So how can...
Because we don't apply action. You're neutral, but what should be done? And if it's a matter of you're supposed to do nothing, then that's that you've taken that commitment to that action. What we're talking about is you're neutral and don't act upon the situation, even if acting means you do nothing. Right, but that point of action is there.
Well, yes. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita one shloka, combining all these aspects.
Okay.
Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dveshe nasti kriya. E bhajanti mam vatsya maitrishu shakyam. I envy no one, nor I am partial to anyone. I am equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me, I am a friend of him, he is a friend of me.
Yes, very good. Yes. So that's why it's thought that the demons think that Krishna favors the demigods, but it's that they surrender and the demons don't. If the demons surrender, then he favors them. Right. That's the whole position. It's just as you surrender, he reciprocates. So that's the point. He's dynamic, but he's neutral, because it could be anything. Depending on how you approach, that's how he reciprocates.
This neutrality, it seems that it is like the basis of the relationship, spiritual relationship.
Yeah, yes. It means the friendship is there, but it goes, that's the whole point is now, if we take this of neutrality, what is the difficult part here? I mean, we're saying, it's impersonal, you're not doing it, but what's the difficulty here? Why is it so elusive, this neutrality? Right? Because then you have to consider everyone else and the situation and who you are. While what we generally do is you have an opinion of that, it's just your feelings, just what the mind throws up from samskaras. It's like, what work did you do? Because the effect of the samskar, that feeling, has already come up from when you first, from when the sense brings it into the ears bring it into the mind. And then the mind then takes that and looks at the memory. And then you have a memory of that. I say, okay, someone should do this. And then you have a memory of that, and your memory of that, it was bad. So therefore, this whole discussion is bad. Rather than, no, you're talking about, showing it in a different light. You know what I'm saying? So you're not, that hasn't got to reasoning, because reasoning now that I've got that, now to analyze that. So without analyzation, without reasoning, we're reacting. And then we're calling that being personal and all these kind of things. But actually the Vedic is that you use the reasonings involved. And so then it's a matter of my position. So in that, I can maintain that I'm the controller and enjoyer. I don't have to think whatever I feel, and I'm the controller and enjoyer. Then that's easy. That anybody can do. The animals do that. But to be able to consider, okay, who am I dealing with? What's their feeling? What is their position that they're in now? What's any history that's there? What's the situation we're in? How can I, in this, with my nature in this situation, how should I act? What's the relationship? What should be done? So that means you have to think, you have to work, that's what we mean by it, it's active. It's a much more difficult position. So we remove that because I don't want to do it. Everybody else should, but I don't want to do it. So I'll have to work that in another way. Oh, you don't care, and then from another angle. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that all these underlying aspects just means we're not using our brain. That's why it's buddhi yoga. Buddhi yoga means we're using the intelligence. We're analyzing according to the standards given to us by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Then we're looking. But otherwise, this other, we just, what is the samskar, how we react? Why is that verse always saying, when it's talking about the soul, why is it always saying he? What about the women? What about the, transgender? What about, this, that, after 1 hour of listing all the names? So what about all those? Yeah, we could put them all on there. Every time we use he, it would take up a whole page. So your 200-page book that you want to publish is going to be 5,000 pages. Like that. So the whole point is that we could go off like that. All that, but where all it is that it's no. When you deal in a generic sense, you use the masculine. You know, which is not a strange thing, because as we get more sensitive about the masculine and feminine thing, then can girls coming up to a bunch of girls, or even a guy coming up to a bunch of girls, can you address that bunch of girls as guys? Means before you couldn't, but now you can. You just call them guys. Hey, guys. You know, before it was actor and actress, now they're just actors. So they just make it, you know, gender neutral, because otherwise, you know, like that. So the gender neutral in the Vedic is him. That's all. And so when you understand that, you don't get about it. If you had this whole thing, well, why not her? Because the point is everyone's trying to control and enjoy, so it's him. You know, you may have the role, but you're still trying to. Is that Lisa? Intelligence and bhakti is neutral, yes. Like that. Though it's always, you know, means the point is that intelligence is neutrally, mechanically neutral, but bhakti means it's favorable to Krishna. But it means that still that we're going to work on the situation that we're in. Because when we say we're not neutral, means we have our own feelings, it's our own things. Right. But bhakti means this, what's going on, how can that be used for Krishna? How, in other words, we're looking at how to deal with the energy. And so we're dealing with according to how it's appearing before us, and then we deal in that way. So that's always how you have to deal. So it's just whether you're dealing with dead matter of the material world, whether you're dealing with the sandhi, sambit, ladin, it doesn't matter. It's about what is being presented at the time. Does that make sense? Yeah. So if it's Krishna's at Radhakund, then Radharani may be directly serving Krishna. Or if it's been, yeah, does that make sense? But if it's at Nanda Bhavan, then she won't. Then Rohini, maybe a few maidservants, then they'll do the swings. Does that make sense? So it's just, it depends on the situation that's there. So one's always having to see what's, in other words, what the secondary, which is feminine, how it is engaged in the service of the primary, which is Krishna, which is the masculine. Like that. So, yeah. So that's always what's happening, yes.
Can we say, by definition, energy can be neutral? It belongs to somebody. It's not a neutral thing on its own.
No, but we're neutral in that we don't have a identification of how we would see that connected to us. It'll always be how we see that connected to Krishna,
yeah,
and our connection to Krishna.
Yeah.
So that's why it's with every living entity in the spiritual world, then the relationship is friendship. Right, because it's the connection to Krishna. Right, but there's variety of friendship. Does that make sense? Someone's older, someone's younger, someone's equal, someone's confidential. Does that make sense?
It's a difficult concept because we see friendship, like, for example, Srila Rupa Goswami, he says, you know, friendship between basically boys or men, we can say. But we don't see much friendship between, you know, Krishna's group and the Gopis group, or Gopis being friends with Mother Yashoda. It's a different.
No, but if they interact and they deal, it just means acquaintance is also, you would categorize it as a friendship aspect. They're an acquaintance, so where do you put that? Are they your servant? Are they your, you know, like this? So it's just that it has that position. That's the natural relationship that between living entities. Now, what's the particular, you know, position of rasa and those rasas, their relationship with each other? That's another thing. So different rasas are friendly with each other, neutral towards each other, or inimical.
Right.
Simply, but that doesn't mean that the gopis have no problem in interacting with Mother Yashoda. Right? But their rasas are endless. Because when there's parental rasa, can you manifest conjugal rasa? It just doesn't go. It doesn't work. Like that. So that's the whole point, is that whenever there's a situation where it's that, then it can't manifest. It takes on that hidden nature. Just like with the cowherd boys, then when they're in Mother Yashoda's place, they have to control themselves. The rasa is not a problem, but the manifestation of it then has to be restricted. Does that make sense? You know, so you have those different aspects. So those are the relationships between the rasas themselves. So,
yeah.
But with the devotees, then you see they're all very nice with Mother Yashoda or anyone.
So, yeah. Can we say that again in friendship there are varieties like Suhridam, Bandhu, and Mitra?
Yes, no, all those. That's what I meant by senior, junior, equals, confidential, like that. So that's it.
And can you say that when there is a friendship between senior and junior, then along with friendship there is a basic aspect of dasya also involved in that? Otherwise,
the basic is there. Basic of dasya and junior means that it has that flavor. It's not that it's the basic. The basic is friendship. You have friendship, but then there'll be that element of dasya because they're a little junior. You can have dasya that has an element of friendship in it. Like that, you can have that also. So you have these different things. It's just a matter of what's the basis. Don't say it's the basis is that. No, the basis is friendship. And then it may have the mix of these other flavors. Just like senior means that there's that touch of parental, is that you take care of them. Within your area, who you need to know, you know. Others you don't know. It's just like the gopis may not know the yagyic Brahmins, you know, unless they come to their house to do a yagya, and then they know them. But you don't have to know everybody. You know everybody within the range that you need to know everybody. Is that? But you know everyone's devotee, so that much you know. Does that make sense? Because it's a big place. Okay, when Duryodhana left in such an angry mood, everyone regretted this incident, and King Yudhishthira also was very sorry. But despite all these occurrences, Krishna was silent. He did not say anything against or in favor of the incident. It appeared that Duryodhana had been put into illusion by the supreme will of Lord Krishna, and this was the beginning of the enmity between the two sects of the Kuru dynasty. This appeared to be a part of Krishna's plan in his mission to decrease the burden of the world. Conclusion. Only by the grace of Lord Krishna can one fulfill all his desires and thus be freed from all anxieties. In the material world, everyone has a particular type of desire to be fulfilled, but one is never able to fulfill his desires to his full satisfaction. Especially those who are envious of the Lord and his devotees are plunged in an ocean of anxieties because of unfulfilled desires. But King Yudhishthira, because of his unflinching devotion to Krishna, could fulfill all his desires successfully by the performance of the Rajasuya sacrifice. From the description of the Rajasuya Yajna, such a function appears to be a great ocean of opulent desires. Such an ocean is not possible for an ordinary man to cross. Nevertheless, by the grace of Lord Krishna, King Yudhishthira was able to cross it very easily, and thus he became freed from all anxieties. Right? Because he's a devotee of Krishna, he's surrendered to Krishna. Right? Only by the grace of Krishna. So, therefore, it all worked out. While Duryodhana, he's family, he's part of the thing, everybody else is satisfied, he's not. Why? Because he doesn't connect it to Krishna. Because he doesn't connect it to Krishna, therefore, he's not satisfied. Does that make sense? He can never be satisfied. Right? It doesn't matter how much he has, he's not satisfied. It's just like, look at Jarasandha. Okay? Now, for Jarasandha, he's enemies with Krishna. But is he willing to give them that what they ask for?
Yes, he
is. Because he's more gracious. He's more cultured. Right? It doesn't mean it changes his stand on them being an enemy. And now, what's the position? Who in this particular situation is senior and who's junior?
Jarasandha
is senior because they've come to him and he is graciously given. Right? It puts him in a senior position and he's happy with that. He'll take that. You know, that he's superior to the three of them. You know, Krishna, you know, that he's been fighting with them and all that, so he's been acknowledged. And then the Kurus and that, they're the, you know, big, you know, have been emperors in the past, but now they're coming to him. That makes him bigger. You know, it's like in the Gita when it mentions that the rich man, the devotee goes to the rich man, and so the rich man thinks, see, they're surrendered to God, but they come to me for money, so I'm superior to God. Right? So it works for them. But Duryodhana was so small-minded that they simply asked for 5 villages. Now, if he had given them 5 villages, they're already on the side. That they're just going to stick to their little villages. And he's the superior. He gave them. He's gracious. But he won't even give them enough, you know, to stick a pin in. Like that. You know, half a pin? No, just nothing. And so, therefore, then, because of that, the demoniac nature is such, it utterly destroys him. And anybody connected with him. So,
Maharaj, all of these desires that Yudhishthira had to fulfill here, is that because Krishna is like he wanted to show Krishna supremacy? Because the Pandavas, they were like satisfied also by themselves in the forest, like living simple.
Yeah.
But then these insurmountable desires that he had, was that like coming?
But if they're sitting in the forest, how does that establish Krishna as the supreme personality, you know, in the universe? Well, you see, who was there was from the universe, right? So that's then it's there. He didn't come up with it. His father asked him to do it. And then he thought it was a good idea. Because then he can establish Krishna's greatness.
This kind of mentality is always a problem when somebody has too much arrogance, ego, and
yes,
you know,
yes,
and
yes.
So I can see that actually this helps kind of separate the personalities, the different mentalities.
Yes, yes. Because divine and demoniac is a mentality. It's not necessarily how you're situated. Like, Prahlad Maharaj is this king of the demons, but it doesn't mean that he's got a demoniac mentality. Does that make sense? And as a devotee, he's unaffected by them.
Because I know devotees, they use kind of this technique. They just poke in this false ego in a joy mood, or kind of
mean poke at it?
Yes.
Yeah, because I mean that's what you might do with friends or
yes.
Someone you know. If you don't know them, you don't do that.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, it's only for friends, because the thing is then they'll poke back. Don't worry.
No, but the problem is that they become insulted actually.
Then don't poke.
Okay.
You know, that's it. It means you you know, the standard is don't disturb the minds of the ignorant. It means if it's situations where you have to act, it's your duty, and they get disturbed, you can't do nothing about that. But you don't make the endeavor to disturb them. Right? In other words, you don't act in a way that they will become disturbed. You perform your duties, and if they become disturbed by that, that you have no control over. So there's a difference. If in doing your duties and you do something that's proper and all that, and they would actually prefer it done in another way that's improper, then that way they get upset. There's nothing you can do. But to just, you know, unprovoked to poke them, then, you know, it always escalates. Right, you know. One pokes, the other pushes, the next one punches, and something like that. It just keeps going.
As you mentioned about going to rich man and asking for funds for temple or something like that, in that attitude he feels that even though they are devotee, they are coming to me and they are asking for help.
Means they can, the demoniac mentality.
So we should allow them to feel like that, because this is
what are you going to do about it?
Means we can preach that this is service to Krishna and Krishna has given you all these things, so you can contribute.
Yeah, but you just have to do it in such a way that it works. Now, if he hears that philosophy and rejects giving a donation,
so focus should be on, he should give a donation.
Means point is why the donation?
The service of Krishna.
Yes, but why the donation? Why not do some other service? Why are you picking donation for this particular individual? That's a question.
He's got money.
He has money, and he identifies as a person with money, and he's, you know, has that identity that he's charitable. So therefore, you're engaging that aspect in Krishna's service. So in other words, we're preaching, and then that raises money. But if we just go out and collect, you know, probably never called them collectors. We call them collectors. Because we think it's just about the money. No, it's about engaging them in service. And if you engage them in service, because this is the service they can do, you get money. So that makes a difference on how you approach, how you do. In other words, you will try to put in as much Krishna consciousness as you can. Now, if you just take it as collection, oh, you can't talk anything because he may not give. So yeah, you collected money, and he's engaged, but you could have engaged him more. By hearing how much of the philosophy and culture that he'll appreciate and stopping there. And getting the donation. Because then next time he can go a little further. Because he gets purified, now he can hear more philosophy. But he gave a donation, he's got purified, but you're not going to tell him any philosophy because you don't want to ruin the chance of a donation. So then after how long, then he goes and starts giving to something else, because they will talk to him and they will inspire him and they will do all those things.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like, if you're... does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole point, is it has to be in such a way that it's preaching. Money comes because they appreciate what you're doing, so therefore they give a donation. So it's not fundraising. You know? It's that you may use techniques of that, but it's not fundraising. You're preaching. And that just happens to be because you're working in the area of money. That's just how money works.
That itself will purify him.
Yeah. No, but it's not that he doesn't give a donation. It's that they both go together. But the point is it's preaching.
Like, Tamal Krishna Maharaj reported that the Dai Nippon executive board, in that whole discussion, 80% was Srila Prabhupada talking Krishna Katha and preaching, and only 20% was the real deal.
Yeah. So if they can listen and they're like that, then that's great. Point is because they're only going to about the money, then if they have to sit there and listen to all this Krishna Kanta, they'll do it. You know? But they get the benefit. So that's the whole thing, is that you see Prabhupada, we just say that he's preaching. But in his preaching, did he not open 108 temples? Didn't you make thousands of devotees? Didn't you have influence in so many ways? Was there not money? Was there not so many things happening? So all this happened just on its own by magic. So that's the point. It's through preaching it happened. But we think it's no, by the mechanics, that's what's going to make it happen. No, it's the preaching is going to make it happen. Because if it comes to mechanics, we may not have the skill for those mechanics. But as a preacher, we do. You know, it's like you take somebody from, okay, just say, you just take a devotee, okay, and he's out on one of these, you know, collections. Like that. So from his background and his karma, would he ever be able to go out into his own community and raise money?
No.
Never. Right? Means if he came from one of those, that kind of background like that, they're always giving in charity and they're always talking to each other about that, and they find a charity that's good because they always give in charity. So you have to pick some charity, and then you found a charity that you really believe in, so then you may tell your friends that, you know, you're giving in charity anyway, so give to these guys. But you're already giving in charity, you're in that. We're talking about, you're not in that group. So why should, would they listen to you? It's only because of being a devotee. It's only because of devotional service. We're thinking, oh, it's because I'm so expert at collecting. No, it's because it's devotional service. You wouldn't collect a paisa. I mean, literally. Oh, you might get a few paisa if you stood on the road there like that, but no guarantee. So that's the whole point, is that it's devotional. So when we just see it in its pure state, then it works better. It's just like, yeah, no, you won't get. Yeah. You know, we'll let everybody connect the dots. We'll stop right there. Okay? Yes? You look good? Okay, so he became free. That's the thing, is you always see this juxtaposition between the Pandavas and Duryodhana. Like the opening of the Gita, setting the scene, it's how Yudhishthira is surrendered to the Lord and everything like that, and Duryodhana is not. So in both of them, Duryodhana perceives a problem, right? And Arjuna perceives a problem. What's the difference?
Arjuna surrenders.
Arjuna surrenders while Duryodhana just makes some new plans and politics and all that. So that's the difference.
Yes.
So here again, you see the same difference.
Gets a system.
Huh?
Gets a system.
Yes, he gets a system. That's, so then the origin, you're saying that the origin of systems is coming from Duryodhana? Oh, okay. Yeah.
And now the problem is when we have the two mentalities inside the same person.
Yes, so the point is that whichever is cultivated, then you'll want to do more of that. So if you cultivate the spiritual, you want to do more of that. You do cultivate the material, you want to do more. So it's, but by the spiritual being stronger, by that being there, it will eventually, you'll get purified, and then your taste will change, and then it will go. So that's why you always have to have the one. Right? You know, that's why we say mixed devotional service. We don't just say mixed. Yeah. Chapter 76, the battle between Salva and the Vrishnis. Pratigya. The heroes of the Yadu dynasty were determined either to die on the battlefield or to gain victory. Adhyaya Pakashita. This chapter relates how the demon Salva, acquired a huge and terrifying airship, how he used it to attack the Vrishnis in Dwarka, and how Lord Prajumna was taken from the battlefield during the fighting that ensued. Yeah, they either fly in the air or go under the water. Never see a battleship, right? Shalva was one of the kings who had been defeated at the time of Rukmini Devi's marriage. Having vowed then that he would rid the earth of all the Yadavas, that's the problem with attachment, right? He began worshipping Lord Shiva each day by eating only a palmful of dust. Only. It's a lot of dust. After a year had passed, Lord Shiva appeared before Shalva and asked him to choose a benediction. Shalva begged for a flying machine that could go anywhere and that would strike terror into the hearts of demigods, demons, and humans alike. Lord Shiva granted this request and had Maya Dhanava construct for Shalva a flying iron city named Shalva. Shalva took this vehicle to Dwarka, where he and his huge army laid siege to the city. From his airplane, Shalva bombarded Dwarka with tree trunks, boulders, and other missiles, and he produced a mighty whirlwind that obscured everything with dust. When Prajumna, Satyaki, and the other Yadu heroes saw the plight of Dwarka and her residents, they went out to do battle with Shalva's forces. Prajumna, the best of warriors, destroyed with his divine weapons all of Shalva's illusory magic, and he also bewildered Shalva himself. The Shalva's airplane began wandering aimlessly on the earth, in the sky and on tops of mountains. But then a follower of Shalva's named Juman struck Prajumna on the chest with his club. Thereupon, Prajumna's chariot driver, thinking his master seriously injured, carried him from the battlefield. But Prajumna quickly regained consciousness and simply criticizes the driver for doing this. Shloka Anusharana. Summary of verses 1-7. Shalva attains an iron ship, airship, as a boon from Lord Shiva. 8-25. Shalva besieges Dwarka. 26-33. Prajumna removed from the battlefield. 1-7. Shalva obtains an iron airship as a boon from Lord Shiva. Sukadeva Goswami said, "Now please hear, O King, another wondrous deed performed by Lord Krishna, who appeared in his human-like body to enjoy transcendental pastimes. Hear how he killed the master of Shobha. Shalva was a friend of Shishupal's. When he attended the wedding of Rukmini, the Yadu warriors defeated him in battle along with Jarasandha and the other kings." Footnote 15. Srila Sanatana Goswami points out that Shalva had more hatred for the Lord than Jarasandha. Right? Because he's not going to give any space. Well, Jarasandha will do as long as it puts him in the superior position. Like that. So you can see Shalva swore in the presence of all the kings, "I shall rid the earth of the Yadavas. Just see my prowess." We see Rukmini did that also. It didn't work out so great. You know. Having thus made his vow, the foolish king proceeded to worship Lord Pashupati, Shiva, as his deity by eating a handful of dust each day and nothing more. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, "He made this promise because he was foolish, with no intelligence, since it was impossible to kill them. He then worshipped Shiva because he was his family deity, the master of people who were like animals, such as Salva, and who could fulfill his desires. He should enjoy happiness. His vow was quite suitable. Eating dust, it was ridiculous." But, you know, like that, you do that to please Lord Shiva, you know, why not, you know, it's like, What was it? Banasura would sing songs. Yeah, you know, use 1,000 arms to play musical instruments and sing, and you know, like that, make something nice. You know. Basically, they do whatever they like. I'm sure that scripture mentions some stuff, but that's the point with demons. They just make up their own religion. That's how they end up with all the human sacrifice, this, that, and, you know, they just make up their own religious process. They may have some connection to Shastra. Yes, you're supposed to do austerity to please Lord Shiva, but then how they go about that, then it's always something tamasic. It has to be, otherwise. Why would they be demons? They do something nice. Right? And you see so many other persons sit down. Who is it? Yeah, Draupadi in the previous life. Then she also worshipped Lord Shiva. But was she eating, you know, a palm full of dust or that? No, she just sat down in meditation. And by that, then he became pleased. You know, so it's you don't have to do it in this tamasic way. The point is it's always about him. You had, who's that other one? He cut off bits of his body and throw it in the fire. Like that. And so then, you know, as Lord Shiva just comes because of his compassion. You know, Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The great Lord Umapati is known as he who is quickly pleased. Yet only at the end of a year did he gratify Shalva, who had approached him for shelter by offering him a choice of benedictions." Srila Jiva Goswami explains, "Shiva appeared because he knew Shalva's benediction would fail. He was the master of Uma, whose portion was Maya. It was better if Shiva did not come. Shalva was surrendered. If he did not respond, people of this world would think that Shiva ignored those who surrendered. Generally, as Lord of the animals, he hides himself by living in places for burning bodies and associated with its residents, or appearing as Durvasa along with Dattatreya. It is not proper that Shiva encourage persons opposed to the Lord and increase their powers. He actually gave the benediction because the Lord had a great desire to fight. And they'll fail. Right? Anything you take up against the Lord will fail, so... Yes.
Is this all happening while Krishna is away from Dwarka?
Yes. That's why you don't see at this point.
He was in the hospital.
Sorry?
Not seeing
it now. He's at the Rajasuya.
Oh.
Yeah, and then, you know, so then, yeah. Otherwise, he goes there when, you know, the problem is with Krishna, but he'll harass everybody else. It's more political. Just like the two gentlemen, they deal with the crocodile grins with each other, but they harass each other's family or friends or business or like that. But face to face, they're so nice. So, it's a standard way of dealing.
when Shishupal died over there, he was the friend of Shishupal.
Yes.
And to take revenge.
Yes, yes. Also Rukmi. You know, it's all these Yadus, they create trouble, right? Sukadeva Goswami continued. Shalva chose a vehicle that could be destroyed by neither demigods, demons, humans, Gandharvas, Uragas, nor Rakshasas, that could travel anywhere he wished to go, and that would terrify the Vrishnis. Footnote 16. He chose a vehicle that would frighten the Vrishnis. It went on the land, water, mountains, and sky. However, it would not kill them. This last part of the benediction was inspired by Shiva, Srila Sanatana Goswami. He says that it would, what was it? That it would terrify the Vrishnis. So he's thinking it'll terrify them, and because they're in that terrified mood, then his fighting, he'll be able to destroy them. Right? Because that's one of the things. If the enemy is confident, they're more difficult to deal with if you break their confidence. Does that make sense? So that's why many times, you know, you say things or you do things. It means first, in the beginning, you say things to get them inspired, right? You know, and then you have a proper fight. And one of the ways that demonic, they try to break the spirit, because it's about winning, it's not about the fight. Well, kshatriyas, it's performing your duties, which then in this particular case is fighting, right? Like that. Because for them, whether you win or lose, you know, you win. You performed your duty. You're going to get benefit. So, Lord Shiva then inspired him to say like this, rather than it will destroy, with this I can destroy the Vrishnis. No, it says it'll strike terror. He was proud of his position. He figured he'll be able to do that.
It is like Krishna gets terrified. He brings the head of Vasudeva.
Yes, yeah. So it's just, he does that. He gets that benediction. But he doesn't get more than that. You know, yeah. So that's the way it works. You know, it's like, who is it? Dantavakra? He could stop Jayadratha could stop the Pandavas. Doesn't mean he could defeat them, but he could stop them. So Lord Shiva said, so be it. Right? Many times they get through certain things before they get onto something that'll be a problem. He says, so be it. You know, so that's done. After that, you can't ask for anymore. On his order, Mayadhanava, who conquers his enemies' cities, constructed a flying iron city named Shalbha and presented it to Shalva. Sugadeva Goswami continued, this unassailable vehicle was filled with darkness and could go anywhere. Upon obtaining it, Shalva went to Dwarka, remembering the Vrishni's enmity towards him. Shalva besieged the city with a large army, O best of the Bharatas, decimating the outlying parks and gardens, the mansions along with their observatories, towering gateways, and surrounding walls, right? Because always on the houses, you always have some high place. And that's for, you know, sitting, observing, that's there, one for protection, but it's also for going and sitting and talking, looking at the stars and the moon at night, or it has so many applications. So they would all have those like that. For us, then, they're water tanks, but before they were actually places you could go. Yeah. Okay, along with their observatories, towering gateways, and surrounding walls, and also the public recreational areas. Right, so you had the private areas and you had the public areas. It's just part of the thing. Having the wall, it just creates that sense of security. Why would we have a problem with that? Right? It means if they're not bothering us with their wall, so why would we have a problem? Why do they have to, if I have a wall? What's going to be the problem? The problem is I can't see what's going on. If there's some benefit to be gained there, I don't get it. So therefore, you know, what are they doing in there? Why shouldn't I know? You understand? So that's the point. Walls are just a natural sense of security. Right? So as long as it doesn't bother someone else, the wall, meaning in the way it's actually creating a problem for them. You know, they have a problem with, you know, walls, that's their problem. So they say, yeah, so they would be complete. Then you have the public areas. And so those are open. So that makes sense, yeah. From his sharp, excellent airship, he threw down a torrent of weapons, including stones, tree trunks, thunderbolts, snakes, and hailstones. A fierce whirlwind arose and blanketed all directions with dust. Thus terribly tormented by the airship Shobha, Lord Krishna's city had no peace. O king, just as the earth, when it was attacked by the three aerial cities of the demons, seeing his subjects so harassed, the glorious and heroic Lord Prajumna told them, "Do not fear," and mounted his chariot. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, "Though Balaram wanted to go out and fight, Prajumna said, 'We will kill Shobha. You should remain inside comfortably.'" Saying this, he went out with Samba and others, right? Because Balaram's there, but they could take care. So that's the general thing. You start with the less. You don't start with more, right? You know, the mosquito comes forward, you send out a better, bigger mosquito. You don't send out a howitzer, right? You know, does that make sense? No? You understand howitzers?
Big tank.
You know, a big cannon. It's the cannon on the tank. It's the howitzer. Srila Jiva Goswami explains, beginning to realize that his citizens were afflicted, Prajumna said, "Do not fear." Since he was the third expansion in the Chaturvyuha, Bhagavan, in the past times in this world, he was a warrior, and the best warrior, Maharataha. This was most astonishing. He would have an amusing pastime with insignificant demons. Sugadeva Goswami continued. The chief commanders of the chariot warriors, Satyaki, Charudeshna, Samba, Akrura, and his younger brothers, along with Hardikya, Banu Vinda, Gada, Shuka, and Satana, went out of the city with many other eminent bowmen, all girded in armor and protected by contingents of soldiers riding on chariots, elephants, and horses, and also by companies of infantry. A tumultuous, hair-raising battle then commenced between Shalva's forces and the Yadus. It equaled the great battles between the demons and the demigods. With his divine weapons, Prajumna instantly destroyed all of Shalva's magic illusions, in the same way that the warm rays of the sun dissipate the darkness of night. Lord Prajumna's arrows had all golden shafts, iron heads, and perfectly smooth joints. With 25 of them, he struck down Shalva's commander-in-chief, Juman, and with 100, he struck Shalva himself. Then he pierced Shalva's officers with one arrow each, his chariot drivers with 10 arrows each, and his horses and other carriers with 3 arrows each. When they saw the glorious Prajumna perform that amazing and mighty feat, all the soldiers on both sides praised him, right? Because everyone knows what's good fighting, so when they do something good, they praise. Because it's good, because they're warriors. They're out there, they appreciate. Because if you don't appreciate others in your field, you can never actually be that great in your field. Because then you can't see what's good, you don't know the strengths, weaknesses, like these. At one moment, the magic airship built by Maya Dhanava appeared in many identical forms. And the next moment, it was again only one. Sometimes it was visible, and sometimes not. Thus, Shalva is a...
You missed the footnote.
Okay. Out of fear of Prajumna, the vehicle became invisible and unsteady in form. This is described in the next two verses, Srila Jiva Goswami. Thus, Shalva's opponents could never be sure where it was. From one moment to the next, the Shalva airship appeared on the earth, in the sky, on a mountain peak, or in the water. Like a whirling, flaming baton, it never remained in any one place. Wherever Shalva would appear with his Shalva ship and his army, there the Yadu commanders would shoot their arrows. Shalva became bewildered upon seeing his army and aerial city thus harassed by his enemy arrows. He didn't say that it could be unharassed, undefeatable. That's why then by Lord Shiva's arrangement, he didn't ask for any of these things. And he said, so be it, when, you know, it was basically complete in his mind. Okay. He was bewildered, which upon seeing his army in an aerial city, which thus harassed by his enemy's arrows, which struck like fire and the sun, and were as intolerable as snake venom. Footnote 18. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that the arrows of the Yadu commanders burnt like fire, struck simultaneously from all sides like the sun's rays, and like snake venom, were lethal by a single touch. Because the heroes of the Vrishni clan were eager for victory in this world and the next, they did not abandon their assigned post on the battlefield, even though the downpour of weapons hurled by Shalva's commanders tormented them. Okay, so that's the point, is they're fixed in their duties and simply trying to establish everything properly. Right? And so by doing that, then everything works out. So that's the whole point, is that's there. So when we have that determination to do our particular duties to please Krishna, then that's why everything works nicely. It's that determination that pleases Krishna. It's not the mechanics of the duty. It's the determination to do them and to do them to please Krishna. So it's because it's pleasing Krishna, and then one's determined to do that, then there's the particular knowledge and skill. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, action, the most important thing of the action is the mood in which it's performed. Right? So we see that mood aspect is common. Because it means you have the knowledge, but you have to have the proper mood and how to apply it. And in applying it, you have to use that proper mood also. And that proper mood, that's going to affect your understanding and appreciation of the goal or results.
Can you say that the mood is the main thing for everything?
Means in the mechanical application, yeah, it's the central point, it's where you start. It means if you don't have all four aspects, it won't happen. But the point is if you want to start somewhere, you start with the mood. Just like, okay, I want to correct the consciousness. Where do I start? With identity. Yes. Right? If I try to just control the mind, control the yes. sense, that won't work. I start with the identity. Because I act according to my identity. I change the identity, I change how I act. Yes. So in the same way is that in dealing with all the aspects that are here that make an action successful, then the first thing to deal with is the attitude. Right? It means we've established that, you know, about it's, the goal is about Krishna and this and that, but we're talking about you're going to do an activity. So therefore the result of that activity, then that being for Krishna and all those things. And so that will come based on your mood. Because if you don't have a devotional mood, how it would be about Krishna? But you have to have the knowledge that it's about Krishna. That's why Prajumna comes from Shankar Shankar. Mm-hmm. The knowledge, then you have the right attitude. Then you have the right goals. Mm-hmm. Right? Then you can apply yourself. So there's a natural hierarchy. But the first thing where you start with is change your desire, change your attitude on how you do. Does that make sense? So that's why I am not the body, I'm the soul, I'm servant of Krishna. So you get both aspects.
Yeah. Other than working for this identity, for improving consciousness, most of the time it works, but some situations overpower that, or sometimes we want to forget that identity as servant just to enjoy the environment.
Yes, but as we will be frustrated, no? So then you start to use the intelligence and see is that every time I try to enjoy and I know it's wrong, but I come up with some new angle to point out that, well, may, you know, this one's all right. That at some point you understand that the overall principle is wrong, so no amount of unlimited variety will ever make it valuable. So then you start to use intelligence, you start to give it up. Right? And so that giving it up may be effective right from there and you never have problem again. Nice, but otherwise it may be you have that determination, then the problem comes up again, but then you again deal with it. But the point is, the sense you've dealt in a proper way, then gradually it will improve. Does that make sense? Because light always has more of influence than darkness. We're attached to darkness, therefore we attribute darkness with such power, but actually it doesn't have any power before light. That's why we say, just the chandala chanting one name of Krishna is freed of all sin. And if we're situated in the light, then we will appreciate that. But if we have an attachment for the darkness, then we'll say, no, no, that can't be true. That's okay, that's a pure name, we'll do that. But he's not pure, and he's not chanting the pure name, so it doesn't apply. So what's happening here? It's our attachment. We think darkness is actually more important. Justice is more important, all these things. And it's an offense to the holy name. Don't think the glories of the holy name are exaggeration. That's, you know, what it's for. Does that make sense? So the whole point is we have that understanding. We use the intelligence. And if it doesn't work, then we use it again. It's not that, oh, it happened, that's it, I'm finished. No, the soul is supposed to be situated in the transcendental position. So therefore, we keep at it until it works. Because that's what it's supposed to be. That's why if determination is there, you keep going. That's why it pleases Krishna.
And then it will work out.
Yeah, because if someone's determined, means it can continue. If someone's not determined, then that's here, there. Right.
So to whatever extent we are determined, we should start with that.
Yes. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Govardhana ki.